I have a problem this morning that my watch seems to be going too fast. My watch is 15 minutes before the time that we are actually at. We are at 10. And we want to apologize to you, but we have had some conversation this morning that we will try and influence the security arrangements, the new arrangements that they're introducing at the visitor's center. The system is new, so the people operating it is also not familiar with it, so it takes a little bit longer to get people into the building. We have not yet. We tried. We tried, but they were more than what is happening is that the queue runs like into the street. So it's something beyond our control, but we are grateful to the CEO who is able to join us, and she'll introduce the members of her team as the meeting proceeds. Ms. Moshe Khalek, we are very grateful that you are able to join us. I just want to, while we are getting our documents ready, say that a young lady approached me about a month ago, desperate, because she was getting her pay. And before she could draw anything, the debit holders chowed all the money. And she was in trouble with her husband, because the way we operate now is that members of the family have different responsibilities. So I buy the food and my wife pays the car. And she did not have money to buy the food. Because the bank just deducted all the money provided. I asked her whether she knows about the National Credit Regulator. And she says, no, Uncle Eddie, you see, I don't want other people to know that I'm in trouble. So people also just invited me, so. And it's therefore wonderful that we can have the National Credit Regulator presenting to us today. And they, we hope and trust that indeed we will be able to do our part in terms of oversight on your work, so that we don't have a repeat of young people in this country finding themselves in a situation where their pride is being taken away from them because of irresponsible lending. We, Honorable Intimunya and myself, had the opportunity last year to attend your workshop on responsible lending, and we were quite hopeful when we listened to the members of the credit associations that were present in that meeting. The media showed a lot of interest after that, particularly because we made the remark about the machinesas and people also that are taking sasakas from vulnerable members of our society and then own the sasa payments that is meant to also contribute towards helping people to smoke the pipe. So you do have a very important role to play in not only regulating credit, but also in a deeper sense, helping people that are desperate. Many of our people who have no choice. I'll conclude by just saying that someone mentioned to us over the weekend that as she was walking in the street, four men came and they grabbed her back. And she had fallen in that bag. You know, for us who have money, we have credit cards. For poorer people, they walk with the cash on them. They grabbed her bag and she fell. And he called her. And the response that a friend gave to her was to say, but why don't you go to a money lender so that you can at least pay your debts for this month? So we understand the complexity of the work that you are doing and therefore look forward to hearing you. Please, Madam CEO, it's in your hand to lead us. We would hope that you could go through your presentation for us in 45 minutes. So that we have enough time for the members to also engage with us. Members, if I didn't greet and welcome you, good morning. Welcome to all of you. We are grateful to have you here this morning. I'm sorry that I get carried away sometimes. It's a great to be here with you. We wish you well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And good morning, Honorable Members. And any official from the DTI. My name is Nomsa Motsepare. I'm the CEO of the National Credit Regulator. I have the CFO with me and the Deputy CEO. They were held at the, you know, in the queue outside the business entrance, but are on their way here. I'm going to take you through the NCR strategic plan, and the 3-year annual performance plan. Just to give you an overview of the presentation, this is for me a week. As it is in the government priorities, the DTI priorities, legislative mandate, our vision and mission, the NCR, you know, program, at a snapshot, take you through what the current state of the credit market is now, our stakeholder, you know, engagement, what it is that we are doing in that area. Consumer education, which is part of, you know, our key function of the National Credit Regulator, our investigations and enforcement. Now, in terms of government priorities, we all understand that we've got the medium-term strategic framework for 2014-2019, which really focuses on increasing employment and reducing unemployment, to make sure that there's increase in share, you know, in shares in the household and income for the poorest of the household. Now, the National Development Plan aims to eliminate poverty, reduce inequalities and unemployment, and there's a role to play for the NCR, you know, in that regard. Now, in terms of the DTI's priority, and we look at outcome 4. We will recognize that there are quite a number of outcomes. There are about 2014 outcomes. But we focus on outcome 4 to be aligned to the DTI strategy, which to achieve this national goal, the DTI plays a pivotal role in ensuring that this particular outcome is achieved. So there is decent employment for everybody through inclusive economic growth. Now, let us remind ourselves of the legislative mandate of the National Credit Regulator. It is to promote a fair and non-discriminatory marketplace for access to consumer credit. We are saying that credit is important, but we also know that, you know, for credit to be important, it has to be extended responsibly and borrowed responsibly. To provide for general regulation of consumer credit and improve standard of consumer information, and this is through the credit bureaus that we regulate. To prohibit certain unfair credit and credit market practices, we'll take you through some of our investigations and enforcement actions that we've taken against certain entities. Promote responsible credit granting and use to prohibit reckless lending granting. And Honorable Chair, in terms of reckless lending, this is done across the board. And both our young and old are taken for a ride in this regard. To provide a debt reorganization in cases of over-indebtedness, and this is where that Kathleen was introduced. To regulate credit information and to promote a consistent enforcement framework relating to consumer credit. Now, the NBR's vision and mission is as highlighted there. I'm not going to take you through that. And suffice to say that our vision is to promote the South African consumer credit market that is fair, transparent, accessible, and dynamic. NBR's programs at a snapshot. What are our objectives? Sorry, this slide is running away with me. To promote and integrate responsible credit granting, to promote, to protect consumers from abuse and unfair practices in the consumer credit market and address over-indebtedness, to enhance the quality and accuracy of credit bureau information, to improve NBR's operational effectiveness, and to ensure effective implementation of the National Credit Amendment Act. And I'll take you through what we've done in terms of, you know, setting up, coming up with targets for the next 3 years to be able to do, you know, to carry out these activities. Let me first of all take you through the state of the credit market in South Africa. The amount of money that has been expended to consumers throughout, which is your total gross debtors book to date, stands at 1.63 trillion. The total rent value of new credit granted was 133 billion, with mortgages comprising 32%. This is at the end of September 2015. Unsecured credit increased by about 13.28%. And this is from 18 billion for the quarter ended September 2014, increase of 13.28%. There was a time when we raised serious concern around the fact that there was a huge increase in unsecured credit, and the year-on-year increase at the time was 47%. And since then, because we decided to take enforcement action across the board, we conducted a number of investigations. We raised our concerns with the banks and other big retailers to say we are worried about the extent to which unsecured credit is being given consumers. This has since been reduced, as you can see, to about 18% year-on-year increase. It's something that we are still watching because unsecured credit as a credit product is one of the most expensive credit products that are extended to consumers. But we are happy to announce that through the regulations, the new regulations that were passed, the interest rates across a number of credit products has been reduced. And in terms of unsecured credit, there's been a huge decrease in the extent to which credit providers can provide these loans to consumers. So the interest rate in terms of the maximum that credit providers can charge consumers from the 6th of May this year has been reduced by about 8%. And hopefully what this means is that only those borrowers who are able to afford to pay this credit product will be able to access, you know, these products. And the total payment distribution agent distribution to credit providers from April 2015 to February 2016 was 6.1 billion. Payment distribution agents are companies that have been set up to distribute money that has been paid by over-indebted consumers that are under debt canceling. And these are monies that are paid over to credit providers who are owed money by those over-indebted consumers. So this is really just an illustration of why we believe debt canceling works. Because for those consumers who are over-indebted, they are able to get their, you know, credit agreements restructured so that they can comfortably, you know, pay what they owe to credit providers. And as at, you know, end of February, 6.1 billion had already been distributed to various credit providers because of debt canceling. Now, what do we do as the NCR in terms of stakeholder management? The approach that we take is to work with partners in especially consumer education and in implementing the National Credit Act. We know that we cannot achieve this huge mandate on our own, and therefore we rope in partners where we can to be able to work with them to and enhance the consumer protection. We have established what we call the Credit Industry Forum, which comprises representatives from, you know, debt capturing associations, payment distribution agencies, small credit providers, your microfinance South Africa, your banking association is represented on this forum. We've got consumers are represented on this forum. We've got representations, you know, as I said, you know, also, you know, from the retailers. And this industry, this forum has been formed to identify and deal with challenges that are faced by registrants, by the industry, in implementing the National Credit Act, because we know that there are some challenges that cannot be provided, that are not provided for in the Act, and we cannot re-guarantee the Act, you know, to provide for everything that happens in the industry. So they're able to identify problems and come up with solutions. And this particular forum is on a quarterly basis and is chaired by the National Regulator. We've also got the quarterly regulatory cluster meetings of the Council of Trade and Industry Institutions. And the Code TOTI is chaired by the Department of Trade and Industry, where all regulators are, you know, able to come together and work together on a number of projects. We ran a conference recently together with the National Consumer Tribunal and the National Consumer Commission, you know, on a number of issues that we know are currently, you know, challenging the industry. So we work together with a number of other regulators, you know, in making sure that we enhance consumer protection. We also work with local regulators such as the South African Reserve Bank. In every instance where we investigate the bank, we make sure that we rope in the Reserve Bank, the Register of Banks, and we always keep in the loop as to what is happening. And we have also engaged financial services board on a number of occasions. The caps on the regulation of credit life insurance, which was not regulated before, is going to be done, you know, in such a way that the regulations that are going to be published, the final regulations, were drafted through consultation with the Financial Services Board by the NCR. But we are waiting for the DTI to publish the final regulations in that regard, so that, you know, we should see that, and we would be able to monitor credit life insurance as part of the total cost of credit to consumers. We've also had visitors, delegations by regulators from other countries such as Serbia, Namibia, Botswana, Uganda, and Tanzania, because they want to see how South Africa is regulating this market. These are countries where, in some instances, the regulator is non-existent, and they're looking at coming up with a regulatory framework to be able to, you know, to protect consumers in their countries. And in other instances, the regulation is there. However, they're looking to, you know, to make sure that it is more effective, and therefore we had, you know, these visitors to come and see, you know, how we do things in South Africa. Now, in terms of consumer education, I did indicate that consumer education, you know, is one of our key functions as the National Trade Regulator. We got a grant project, and actually we entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Public Education and Administration to assist over indebted government employees such as teachers, nurses, and the police. Already, we have had to make a presentation to the Department of Public Service and Administration to take them through our work and what debt cancelling entails. We have conducted a number of Know Your Credit Status campaigns, you know, jointly with the credit bureaus and shopping centers, with staff at the DTI and the South African Revenue Services. And we are always willing, you know, to go where we are called. We have been very busy working jointly with local travel authorities in mainly rural areas. We went to Limpopo, we visited James as in Limpopo. We went to the Free State. We went to KwaZulu-Natal, you know, to Epcot and Tatikulu. We went to the Northwest and we visited Taung and Mpumalanga province, where we were made a presentation to pensioners in one chamber, here from day. The program, this outreach campaign, is really targeted mainly at pensioners. and this is through the investigations that we conducted at the NCR, where we realized that there's a lot of mistrading of credit card insurance, especially to the poor and transcipients. You may know of the fact that we've had with you know, the likes of Louis Stores to the National Consumer Tribunal, Supplies and JDG, because of mis-selling of insurance, especially to our grandmothers and grandmothers. And we made it a point at the NCR to say, you know, these are the vulnerable, you know, set of the society that the Act was really promulgated to protect. And therefore, we have made it a point that we will go to the people. We will start engaging with people in rural areas. Because, you know, previously we had challenges in reaching out to the rural areas, but we started to go on roadshows, and we will continue to do that. We've also been to Western Cape. We have not mentioned it yet, but we are going to go back to these provinces that target other rural areas. And we are talking to mainly grand cities, especially our grandmothers and grandfathers. We conducted investigations regarding the sale of the sentiment and of stationaries that used to cover the customers and consumers receiving government social grants, as I indicated. There's overcharging of credit life insurance. We know a cap has not been introduced yet, but where we feel the charges are unreasonable, we have picked up all those cases and referred them to the National Consumer Tribunal. We have a number of cases of reckless lending that we have already referred to the National Consumer Tribunal. Obtaining judgments in incorrect jurisdictions. There are a number of methods that investigators have referred to the National Consumer Tribunal. The overcharging of interest rates and fees, and misleading advertisements. And we are going to continue to investigate this method and more, you know, in the next 3 years, including areas around prescribed debt. Now, our enforcement. We've indicated that here at the end, 2.7, actually, this was as you know, end of January this year. The number has gone up to 59 matters that have been referred to the National Consumer Tribunal. 67 million, we referred a case to the National Consumer Tribunal around Louis Stores, which was misselling credit life insurance, and they have indicated that the 67 million that they have had to refund to consumers for overcharging, you know, insurance products. And we know that may not necessarily be enough, and therefore we've asked for a full audit. And we are doing that with all the other, you know, big retailers. And fines to the amount of 4.4 million was imposed on 9 credit providers by the National Consumer Tribunal. And in our invisos, our outreach programs, where we've been going to rural areas, we've been emphasizing the fact that consumers must not allow credit providers to take their ID books, especially because the local government elections are around the corner. They are trust cards and bank cards. Because this is a criminal offense. And how we've been able to get, you know, credit providers arrested, you know, in a number of ways that we have conducted is that we work jointly with the police to do our thing. And we'll continue, you know, with this exercise. Now, just to take you through the program, in terms of the next 3 years, our first outcome is reduced levels of over-indebtedness. The output is to improve compliance with affordability assessment regulations, which became effective in September 2015. We will be visiting 9 provinces in this year. It does not mean that we'll make a visit to each province. It might mean that we will target a number of areas, a number of towns and villages in each province. And we intend to continue with those visits in the next, the following 2 years. In terms of investigations, to increase compliance with regulations pertaining to the total cost of credit, we know that the interest rates and fees are already kept in terms of the maximum, you know, in the regulations currently. The new fees and interest rates are going to come into force in May, you know, from 6th May this year. And therefore, we will be conducting 14 investigations this year, and we'll conduct 16 the following year and 16 in 2018-19. is looking at decreased levels of reckless lending practices. We are going to be conducting reckless lending investigations and take, you know, enforcement action where necessary. And therefore, we will conduct 60 credit provider investigations in this year, 70 in the following year, and 80 in 18-19. But of course, we will need to couple that with, you know, consumer education. And therefore, we'll be running a number of multimedia awareness campaigns. We'll continue to use radio and TV interviews and newsprint. But we will clearly also focus on misleading ads in that regard. And therefore, we'll conduct 30 of any of, you know, the radio, TV interviews and newsprints and misleading advertisements, which have, you know, a lot of, you know, concerns, especially, you know, for people who, as I indicated, are our vulnerable sector society. We will do 35 in the following year and 40 in 18-19. Now, in terms of improving or improved consumer credit information, we are going to conduct three credit bureau investigations in 2017. We have 13 credit bureaus registered. We will conduct 4 in 2017-18 and 5 in 2018-19. We will also make sure that in order to increase credit bureau compliance in respect of personal credit information, we will get 14 audited reports on an annual basis. And we will review these audit reports so that if there are areas of non-compliance, we will then make sure that we take enforcement action against those particular credit bureaus. So these are audited reports that we get in respect of each registered credit bureau that we receive on an annual basis. Now, in terms of efficient service delivery, we are looking at nearly a 96% uptime on our ICT system. We've got an ICT system currently that we are using, and we are in the process of developing a new ICT system. We are looking at 97% uptime for 2017-18 and 98% uptime for 2018-19. I mean, this is really to allow for any cases. We know that it has to be 100%. You know, we should be looking at 100%, but we know there are always, you know, cases where ICT is concerned. We are also busy developing a service delivery improvement plan. We've been in consultation with the DPI here to assist us in that regard. We've identified our call center as one particular area where we want to see this done. And once we are successful with the call center, we'll replicate it in other programs or other departments within the National Credit Regulator. And therefore, we are looking to make sure that the Credit Delivery Improvement Plan is approved this year, implemented, and, you know, with produced efforts, you know, towards the end of the year. And we'll continue with implementation, you know, in next year. Okay, outcome, the program file really looks at to ensure effective implementation of the National Credit Amendment Act. The National Credit Act was amended in 2014. The regulations became effective, most of the regulations became effective in April 2015. And therefore, you know, we felt it was necessary to make sure that we start doing a lot of work in that area. We will be conducting, or we have already actually started conducting, you know, workshops with relevant stakeholders. So we'll be conducting, you know, 40 workshops in this year. We conducted 40, more than even 40, I can't quite recall the number already, but we've exceeded our target in terms of conducting workshops with relevant stakeholders in this past financial year. So we have kept the number 40 because a lot of people now are aware of these amendments, and it's no longer, you know, a topical issue. And in 2017-18, we are looking at conducting 45 workshops and 50 subsequent to that. We will continue with our, you know, multimedia awareness campaigns. We will conduct 15 this year, increase that to 55 in the following year, and then 60. Coupled with that, we are looking at conducting, you know, having more exhibitions, outcast, you know, outside broadcasts, going on road shows, as I've indicated, we've been on a number of individuals, and we are going to continue with that. I've been involved in those individuals, by the way, you know, make presentations to the people, you know, in rural areas. And therefore, our concentration is very going to be on peri-urban and rural areas, because we believe these are the people that the Act was really mainly, you know, meant for. We will obviously have, in instances where there are contraventions, conduct special investigations. We intend to conduct raids in 4 provinces, and that might cover a number of towns in 1 province. And that's what we've always done. We don't target one town in 1 province. We go to the number of, even if we go to that one town, we target the number of streets, for instance, in Pretoria. We look at prescribed guns in 4 cities, guarantee orders in 4 cities. We will look at unregistered credit providers. The Act now, through the amendment, requires everybody who provides credit to be registered. Before this amendment, there were thresholds. There were certain credit providers who were not required, the very small ones, who were not required to be registered and therefore were not on our radar screen. But because now they are required to be registered and regulated, we are going to make sure that, you know, we intensify our rates, identify these small credit providers, and make sure that they come into the net. Tailor distribution agencies were not registered before. They are now required to be registered, and these are companies, as I indicated, that are required to collect money from over-indebted consumers and distribute these funds to various credit providers. And we do that in 4 cities. And we will take appropriate enforcement action when necessary. We will do the same thing in 17, 18, and the following year. I will stop the Honorable Chair and hand over to the CFO to take you through the budget for the next 2 years. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Masihare. The CFO, can I ask you to also just introduce yourself? We are glad that you could get through the arrangement at the visitor center. We did receive your apology for being late. We understand.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Greetings to all the honourable members. We apologize really for the delay for coming in a bit late. My name is Ayanda Mafulera, the Chief Financial Officer of the National Credit Regulator. And thank you for the opportunity given to take the honourable members through the budget for the next 3 years. The budget that is before the members, it was compiled within the budget guidelines of the National Treasury. Hence, you the increase or the budget increase for the next 3 years is within the 3% and 5%. Guidelines as it was prepared by the National Treasury. When you look at our OPEX, our operational budget, the budget has for the 2017 financial year for 121,208,000 pounds. And then for 2017-18 it's sitting at 125 million, and for the subsequent year 18-19 it's 130 million. So the average really increase on this by that is around 3%. For personnel costs, for 2017-17 we have budgeted for 78.9 million, which from the previous financial year it was sitting at 78 million. So it's a very marginal increase. For 2017-18 it has moved by 5% to 82.9 million. For 2018-19 still the same increase of about 5%. The administrative costs, the budget really has gone down from 16-17 to 17-18 and 19 because we implemented cost containment measures to make sure that we drive the efficiencies within the within our energy. Hence, you know, they did a very, very marginal increase on our administration costs. The program cost, the increase is also very minimal because the decision that they just taken is that most of our, you know, the big cases should be handled by the service providers or the legal center, but other investigations will do them internally. Hence, we've reduced it on our, you know, legal cost or professional cost as well. CAPEX, the budget around that, we have decreased it, but mainly, as the CEO has alluded to, that we are in a process of developing the new ICT system. But our approach, we are going to be developing it in phases. So hence, we will just look at one of the same pay financial year. From 2017, we are looking at finalizing the system of the subsystem that was developed in 2015-16, and then look into the new subsystem this year. As far as the income is concerned, we have matched our expenditure with the expected income. And our revenue line as well, they increased about 5% to match for with the expenditure line. So this year and all the 3 years to come, we are hoping, actually we won't be spending within the budget. Hence, we have not budgeted for a business this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. To both the CEO and the CFO for the presentation. Why did I imagine it would be like something good when we want to open? Oh, the presentation. Can somebody help us with the lights? Martins is not here. Really? Do you know how to get the lights a little bit brighter? Yes, please. Honourable members, it's at that stage where we are able to interrogate this for the officials and CEO to say that the procedure that we normally follow is that we give members, we take them in blocks of three members, they would raise questions, and after they're through with it, we will give you an opportunity to respond to every group of three members. And we say to the members that you are allowed to raise three questions, to prioritize your three important questions. And the way that things are going, I think we can do more than one round of questions this morning. I noted the hands of Honorable Faber, Honorable Dikhale, and Honorable Kahula. Honorable Faber is from Northern Cape, Honorable Dikhale is from Limpopo, and Honorable Kaula is from KwaZulu-Natal. I notice you're in the Honorable Tebe. Can we take you in the second round, please? Honorable Harper, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you for the presentation. To you, Chair, you know, we hear about this every year, about people, as you were saying, that are suffering, and there are different types of suffering. You know, we also get these loan shocks, and you know, my problem is, I still know there is so many of these unauthorized loan sharks that is operating and making a killing in this business. But I don't seem to find that there are really cases that comes out that we can clearly see where they've been taken on. It, to me, almost is if there's someone like not looking at these loan sharks and they are getting away with it in the community, specifically in the community, in the so-called black areas and not in the white areas. But and unfortunately, I think a lot of these are also, and I don't want to put it on COVID, white businessmen that are doing these type of things. And the thing that I've got a problem with is we don't get examples that we can see. These and these cases have been brought forward And because these businesses are huge, I'm talking about huge money, and the communities are suffering because of the interest rate that they have to pay every month. They never get to really get to a zero. So that is my first concern, that I don't really think you are doing the turning back is really necessary. We have to get rid of this. Then, on reckless lenders. I've heard nothing about the African Bank. There's a court case. I've heard nothing about that from you. As well as the loop, you touched on that. But why don't you take serious action on this? You know, we hear about this, but there is no criminal charges that's been put against these people. I mean, we don't have a walks investigating this Africa Bank. And no one takes accountability. So if there's no accountability, there's no consequences. And if you don't have that, then this will just go on, and the next bank will go on and be credit and linked recklessly. We understand there's also reckless spenders, but the reality is you have to regulate that, and you can't take action. And I don't want to say it like that, taking action like against the president, but you can't take action against certain institutions. How will you eventually get people to take accountability? They have to, and some big companies, you have to have someone to take accountability by actually following it up, taking people's support on these types of matters. Thank you,
sir. That will be all from that. I know it's a too. Allow me to just sharpen that slightly, if you will allow me also, please. That if we talk about the loan sharks at one level, the interesting thing is that it's not a black thing. You find within the poor white communities of Pretoria, it's a big problem. But can you also then just link that if it falls within your domain, about the Ponzi schemes. It's not in your domain. Okay, then we'll just leave that up. Honorable Dikhale, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me welcome the presentation by the CEO and the CFO, Douglas Wilgood, job well done. Thanks, ma'am. I just want to check, Chairperson, because I did not hear them telling us about their audit outcome results. How are they doing when it comes to that? And the other question is on program 5, where they are trying to explain as to how they are going to conduct their investigation. I only hear that they will target three programs, 2015-16, and on the other one, 2016-17, four provinces. I want to check why not all our nine provinces. The other one is under the consumer education, whereby they are trying to show us their main activities. They did so well by trying and work with our tribal authorities. But my question was, why did they choose, like for example in Limpopo, why did they choose to go to JFS and not other areas? Because the province is huge, I believe even in other provinces. And what they were doing there, even those citizens, how do they help the people, especially in rural areas where they are running after these such people? Even if they take 50 cents, 30 minutes, but they end up taking a lot from other people. I don't know if ever, maybe it's not in your jurisdiction, there's no problem, but I would be happy if ever you would consider that one, Mama. And you know the question, this one's a comment here, person. That their work really is helping because they ended up arresting case conducted in the Western Cape. The province that we normally hear that everything is clean and perfect, but I'm happy that the work has been done. They must continue to help our people in the Western Cape. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your point on the FAFI, you say that we are looking at gambling and looking at that within that category, but we are leaving it to the CEO to also at any element if you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. CEO and your delegation colleagues. I have been partly covered, but I want to add my vote to the issue raised by Honorable Father Bilon Shark. I remember that even last time when you made a presentation here, we did raise this issue of the loan shark where people get rid of. But I want to add to the issue of the loan shark the new dimension, which is through the funeral benefit scheme called Doma Dobza. I don't know what to call that in English.
I can't translate it.
Are they related, CEO? If they are not, how can they be regulated such that people who put money in them to exactly get the real benefit of what they have paid for? Because there is a lot that is going on in this general benefit scheme called Omar Mosa. I see now that even the formal business set and the funeral schemes are also beginning to have these wings almost not fun in their companies, like Alpha and others. They are beginning to have now, they will be a funeral company, but alongside they will have almost not fun alongside, because it's easy money for them. Are they regulated? If they are not, how can they be regulated? You are talking of unsecured credit somewhere in your presentation. I don't know what page. What is this? What is unsecured credit? And lastly, Chairperson, also Honorable Tekale has covered me a little bit in respect of your reach out program to the rural area. I will not contest to why you started in that course, but what I want to say to you is that KwaZulu-Natal is, in terms of traditional authorities, is the biggest in the country. So you cannot just go to a court and say you're covered KwaZulu-Natal. We have just started, immediately started. If they please to say, can you intensify on these reaching out programs to the rural areas, especially in the traditional area? If you need assistance on that one, I'm there. Thank you.
CEO, if you asked for more money, I'm sure we would have given you more. When you are eliciting from us a stage where we pose our questions in our mother tongue, it begins to tell you that we are passionate about the issues that are on the table for us today. Can I ask you to respond to the three honourable members, please?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Can I first of all introduce the Deputy CEO, Mr. Obed Dongwane. Loan sharks. I indicated that the National Credit Act did not allow for registration of smaller credit providers, and these are your loan sharks previously. And therefore we did not have them on the radar screen. Meaning that, you know, we could not identify where they were operating from. However, what we used to do as the NCR is that we would go to person payout points. The week before that, we would send our inspectors to go and scout and gather, you know, information. We would then contact the police and conduct the raid on a particular date. And that would be done unannounced. And we go to present day our points towards month end. And that's how we're able to arrest a number of credit providers in various areas, in various provinces. We've done that also together with, you know, in partnership with the NPA and so forth. But I'm going to also ask the Deputy CEO to come in here. Let's tell you more about, you know, the complexities around that. Through the amendments that were passed a year ago, the smaller credit providers are now required to register with the NCR so that we can have them on our registry, so that we can know where they operate from. And I'm not in any way suggesting that we will be able to get to every loan shark, because there are those that operate in the, you know, in the middle of the heart. At the time when we had a strike in Mariana, we were called by the minister to say, what are you doing, because people are queuing up in Mariana and they are taking loans from these loan sharks. And he said, as we speak, Honorable Minister, our inspectors are already on the ground. They were already in Mariana. They raided on the first day, and a number of these providers got to know that NCR is in town and they closed shop. Our investigators lied low for the next day, and a number of these small clinic providers thought, you know, our inspectors were gone, only to find that on the next day they raided again, and caught a number of clinic providers who were subsequently arrested because they worked jointly with the police in those raids. The issue around African Bank and who is having to take, you know, criminal charges. We have laid criminal charges against the Lewis Group. You will appreciate the fact that African Bank is a bank and under curatorship. We are not required to take any action. You can't take any action unless you go to the court if you want to take any action against African Bank under whilst it's still under curatorship. Be that as it may, the issues around criminal, you know, charges are dealt with by the Reserve Bank, because, you know, banks are also regulated by the Reserve Bank. Now, to respond to Honorable Khaled's queries, we got the NCR received a clean audit in the past financial year. We never had a qualified audit report since inception in 2006. But last year, for the first time, we got a clean audit opinion. In terms of program 5, the question was around why is it that we don't go to, in terms of our investigations, why we don't go to all the provinces when we select 4 provinces. And you will realize that we have indicated that there are a number of contraventions, a number of investigations that we are going to be conducting. On prescribed that on identifying unregistered small credit and unregistered credit providers who are required to be registered. We are looking at issues around the number of other contraventions that we are looking at, but we will also target all the other provinces in that regard. We will not just visit 4 provinces. That's what I can assure you. And in terms of consumer education, why only day first? We have started this project, and we will be going back to the provinces. We do recognize the fact that provinces are huge, and therefore we are going to be targeting other rural areas. We had to start somewhere, and we wanted to make sure that we cover as many provinces as possible. We still haven't been to the Northern Cape and Eastern Cape, not helping rural areas. So we will be doing that in the next 2 months. But as I indicated, we are going to go back to the provinces again, but targeting different rural areas. It doesn't fall in, it falls within our mandate. It falls under the gambling board. Likewise, you know, similar schemes fall under the financial services board. Unsecured credit. It's a loan that you provide to consumers where there's no security that is offered. Okay, if you like, some people call it a personal loan. And normally credit providers rely on, and they have to rely on your bank statement, your salary slip, 3 bank statements and your salary slip. And they have to inquire from the credit bureau records. They must also make sure that, you know, they ask you other questions than the borrower, because a lot of, you know, such information will not be recorded on the credit bureau, you know, records. You know, things like school fees may not necessarily appear in the credit bureau records, and therefore that's information that consumers must disclose, you know, whenever they approach credit providers, you know, apply for the loan. So unsecured credit, so we have unsecured credit, which has indicated is a personal loan, if you like, and then you have vehicle finance, which would fall under secured credit. You would have, and then we normally separate that particular credit products from mortgage loans, because mortgage loans would cover basically your fixed assets, for instance, your residential house. Yes, we will definitely intensify our individuals in KZN, in other and in other provinces, because we do recognize the fact that provinces are huge, and we really want to be sure that we get to the rural, you know, population, because those are the people that mostly, you know, credit providers target whenever they want to start exploiting consumers. Thank you. I will just ask some of my colleagues to perhaps add to my responses.
The question DCOE, as you said, she was already referred to you, and also then for our colleagues in finance to talk about the audit outcomes, please.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. With regards to the two questions that have been raised by Honourable Faber, let me just start off by saying that pre-2005, the consumer credit market was, all intents and purposes, unregulated. And we saw predatory lending practices, people abused to the T and so forth. And then 2005, the National Credit Act from Argentina. As you may appreciate it, FDR is still a baby, because 2005, 2006 were the formative stages of the organization, with the enforcement provisions coming into being in June 2007. And there are a lot of things that go into building an organization, such as recruitment of relevant people with competent skills, you know, ICT systems that are going to complement your operations and so forth. Now, when you peruse the mandate, or I mean the preamble of the National Credit Act, what realizes that the mandate assigned to the NCR is huge indeed. What we are saying is that we are not shy to implement, and we are going to implement, we are going to enforce this wonderful piece of legislation which protected the country from the recession of 2008-2009. But what I wanted to point out is that juxtapose this huge mandate with the capacity of the organization. We're talking less than 200 employees operationally and human resources and all that and so forth to regulate the entire South African consumer credit market, which has a history of the crisis that has to deal with. One thing I would say is that strategically, as an organization, we have decided that we need partnerships to be effective. We do have trained people, inspectors and so forth, but we need collaboration with the likes of South African Service, your HOPS, and all the other law enforcement agencies. Other regulators, for example, because we have cross-functional mandate, your FSB, like the Honourable Member Kaula referred to, funeral colors and so forth, there's the bank itself and so forth. Not only that, but the bench, the judiciary, is very key. Because what happens, certain provisions of conduct are illegal or unlawful in terms of the National Credit Act, like the unlawful retention of cards and pins, ID books and so forth. Then we are conduct rape, people are arrested. And however, it's a different mandate altogether for the prosecution of the cases. And this is where the judiciary comes in. This is where the national prosecuting authority comes in. Prosecutors have to be well versed with the provisions of the ACA so that they can successfully prosecute these cases in court. The magistrate as well has to be well versed with the provisions of the National Credit Act. And the challenge currently is that you have different interpretation assigned to this piece of legislation by different jurisdictions. So there's no, you know, unevenness or uniformity as far as the interpretation is concerned. And this has a negative impact as well on the cases that are prosecuted before them. Coupled with this, having partnerships and so forth, we have realized that education is very, very key. For us to be effective, you need the collaboration and cooperation of the very first thing consumers start, that has to be protected. So we educate them and we call upon them to say, we need you to be on our side. Because these people are living amongst you. They are your brothers, they are your uncles and so forth and what is you. Please expose them. Do not support them. On the 31st of March, and I was invited to celebrate the Consumer Rights Awareness, which is an international phenomenon, in Kitalichara, at South Mutindi Stadium. And the attendance was very awesome. What we said to the consumers was, now the act has been lifted up. Every single person who extends credit has to be registered with the APR. So, if you get credit from them, and they are not registered, that particular credit agreement is unlawful, unenforceable. We have asked the court that any case-related matter that is referred to them, they should first ask for the registration certificate. If a credit provider wants to attach your assets, wants to take legal enforcement against you, you know, issue summonses and so forth, they should first and foremost then provide your credit APR certificate to prove that they are registered. Otherwise, it's not a case. And the message that we are saying to consumers is anyone who extends credit to you while they are unregistered, that is unlawful, take the money, use it. So education is very, very key, so we're using the various platforms, you know, to educate our people and so forth and to say, do this to the right people, know your rights as well, of course. An educated consumer, we think, is a very empowered consumer, and is the best line of defense in everything else. I always like in our mandate with the South African and say, I mean, capacity-wise, the South African people, you know, we can even compare ourselves with them. But the basic life challenge is with regards to effective eradication of crime. The second question relates to African Bank. NDR, this is fact. We are the best to have identified that there were problems because of the statistics that we are analyzing and producing and publicizing to the general public. We could see that there were serious problems with African Bank as far as regulatory granting was concerned. We received complaints, we launched a formal investigation, and I think it's well known that the NCR took some serious action against them. We sent them to the National Consumer Tribunal for prosecution and requested the imposition of a fine and many other failures as well. Refunds to consumers and all that and so forth. But it must be remembered that we have a cross mandate with the Reserve Bank regarding this entity. We did whatever we did, and however, as we may well know, it was then placed under curatorship in terms of the Reserve Bank. The MIBEC Commission was appointed to look into what went wrong with African Bank. Including the liability of the direct and so forth. What it is, if there's any criminal action that has been taken, that would be the responsibility of the MIBEC Commission and the bank as far as it's concerned. So our mandate is restricted solely to the credit side of things. We have that, however, the other related came on board, and they are the ones that are supposed to be taking the matter forward. We don't know where that is. If any criminal charges are to be made, I think we have to come out of that. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Just to respond to the honourable decider's question on the audit outcome about the CEO has responded already, but I just want to emphasize that the NCR received a claim or audit for the 2014 financial year.
how does 1560 look like?
1415, we don't have a clean audit. So now the ages, they are coming to start the audit for the 1516 for the financial year. So the audit will be finalized and the audit report will be issued by the Auditor General by the 7th of July. So we are really hopeful and we're working hard really to retain the clean audit status that we will. That would be
assured. Honorable Hale, you know when women deal with these issues, we have better chance of success.
I was saying that in my spirit. Thanks that me and you can think the same. I was happy that it's the lady in front of us. That's why things are going smoothly. And believe me, they got their budget from me.
Thank you. Members, with your permission, I want to ask our content advisor and researcher, particularly in light of the question that was raised by Honorable Farmer, that relates to the Financial Services Board, and also that relates to banks. Can you do additional research for us on that and prepare us a document not longer than 2 pages to give us data on that? Precisely because the Financial Services Board reports to the committee that deals with appropriations, not to us. But it's going to be helpful for us to get an understanding of exactly what it is that it's contained in the interventions that they are making. We will find that there's various other departments of government where we have these overlaps. But because of the importance of the work of the National Credit Regulator, let enable us as members of this committee to be able to have that broad understanding. Is the request clear, honey? It's clear. Can we give you time to give it to us by next week Wednesday when we meet again? Thank you very much. Sorry? No, we week after next week, George. Next week we are here. Yeah. Yeah, next week. Next week is the 13th of April. Can I with that request, because you so readily agreed to it, also ask, you said, Honourable Father, this thing that you're raising about African Bank, there was another bank that also went bankrupt. Was it Samo Bank? Which bank was it? That you looked at that for us as well. Just to give us some of the details. I, for example, work with a forensic auditor that was dealing with the Sambo Bank. There's two things that happen there. You won't get your money. No, you're supposed to get your money back. Because the one point that I want to make is to say that banks don't just have money. You see, with the new African Bank is now going to be resuscitated. But they're talking about the reserve fund that they need to have. Now that reserve fund means that they must have money, capital, that they take from somewhere. Now, if they can't pay back that capital, that's where the curator that comes in and have to look at it. Now, in the case of Sambo, I was made to understand that the managers gave huge loans, which was irresponsible lending, because they were getting commission on the loans that they were giving. So I'm asking, Tanim, that you do that type of investigation on what is it that leads these financial institutions sometimes to be irresponsible in the way that they borrow. They borrow or they lend? That they lend. Honourable members, can we take another quick round? I noticed that we had Honourable Ntebe, Honourable Honourable Dr. Bada. Are you okay, Honorable Jumia? Yeah, I'm fine. Okay. I have three quick questions, which are going to be easy ones. I know that. What will you tell me, please?
Like I was just saying by taking your intelligence, I have two follow-ups and three questions. Am I allowed?
No.
Next week you might be chairing, so you are allowed.
Often in the
Okay, see, I want to start with our past agreement. When the regulator was presenting to us. If my memory serves me well, you agreed that in future you're going to be having a special focus in your presentation on the provincial activities, the provincial dynamics. I don't get it there. If it's not there, can we agree that in future we can be able to do that? That it will also augur well with some of the sentiments raised by Mamadi Khali and Honorable Kaul. The second part is we also agreed that you are going to give us a broader view of the credit environment in the country, but also your consumption landscape, the provincial dynamics. If it's not, can I request that it becomes the second part of the follow-ups that I want to do with you. My question, your annual target, are they real? Are we able to achieve them? We move from 15 to 40, to 55, to 60, with the same mobility resource, with the same financial resource, are we going to be able to match it? Are we not setting the target too far? The other issue is, I know, and the Deputy CEO, you are under oath here. You are going to be quoted by this honorable member in action. That we said you must take money and sell it. It's not reliable. This electronic application, I want to agree that we are living in a technological advanced world. It's going to be, we are part of the globalized community. Either way, electronics will define our life moving forward. But there seems to be non-compliance in that regard, in terms of the affordability assessment and the affordability threshold. Are we, as the regulator, able to make sure that there are mechanisms in place to ensure that such electronic applications are not just in defiance of what we want to do as a regulator? My last question is, as the regulator, how do we then determine the correctness of the cost of credit in relation to also link it to the credit amnesty that we had a few years ago and the impact thereof? I'm not sure if I'm confusing further. I see that you don't agree. Thank you, sir.
Whether you realize, the point is for now, just is the question clear? If the question is clear, then it's fine.
All I would say, yeah, the first question, I'm still that limit. I don't understand it around the provinces.
Let me repeat that for you.
Can I ask it?
Because I wanted to intervene on the first one.
I can give more meat before you come in. I want to appreciate that Mamdi Khalid Kaula raised it. I was born and bred in Dau, and I appreciate that you went to Dau. I'm from the Northwest. So as I sit here, I represent the province. So I would want to have a provincial dynamic reality of what is happening. I know for a fact that you went to Maritana and people were arrested. However, we would want to hear consequence management. What has been done in terms, because I can tell you now, I can tell you to Maritana now. The same situation that existed in 2012 is still there. And what we want, I appreciate that you went to Taung. One reason. Taung in the mining industry in the Northwest was built on the back of the migrant game. And Taung is one of the labor saving areas in the Northwest. So if you went there and you realize the situation on the ground, you would realize that the majority of the people don't are working. They are highly indebted. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, my response, or maybe my intervention on that was going to be honorable. Tibet said with respect, you see, that what we have before us today is the strategic plan and the ATP for the way forward. Now, you are quite right that the last time that you were here, we did say that it would be helpful, which is what we are particularly looking at as members of the NCOP, different from the National Assembly, where we come from provinces. And each one of us, that's why I introduced the members by saying what province they are from. Because each one of us has got that subjective responsibility towards our province. And if you're talking about the work that we're doing, that you're doing, we're looking at the impact that it has on our province. But if you allow me to then say that if we're not necessarily expecting from you to give us that feedback now, but when you come and give us your report on your work, this is the budget that you're giving to us. When you give us the report on your work in such imaging, we would want you to particularly pay attention to each one of the provinces and also the dynamics in each one of the provinces. If you look, for example, at Limpopo and you look at Gauteng, the economic dynamics will be different there. You indicate, for example, that you did not yet go to the rural areas of Gauteng. And we have no problem to say that it's therefore important, which is the point that was raised in our meeting yesterday, where we say, but what is happening with electricity provision in the rural communities? And you correctly pointed out that there is a conscious decision and strategy of the department to look at the rural communities because that's where the most vulnerable people are, not that people in the cities are less vulnerable. I'll bring you a rat. Honourable, you were the chief, we were the chief.
Yeah, I
don't know why I'm just hitting this blank. Please continue, Honourable Member.
I trust you that I see me, Chairperson. Assalamu alaikum. Let me begin by saying that this is an unenviable task indeed. I am impressed. CEO, you seem to be very dedicated, very sincere, and very committed. Deputy CEO, and you have covered a number of issues which I wanted to raise, and I want to thank you for that, but I will just mention them very briefly. That leaves me no choice then, CFO, but to begin with the budget. The other income, you mentioned other incomes. Just give me an idea what you mean by other incomes. I'm also questioning, I noticed that the ICT was spending something like 2 billion rand. I'm asking that is this adequate, is it sufficient, are you guys doing enough? Because with the task that you are faced, the business of today, we still want to be in business tomorrow, must computerize. So, is it adequate, and are you guys doing enough to prepare? Because you can really do a lot with information technology these days. And these guys that you are dealing with, like banks, they are very, very well computerized, and if you're not going to keep up with them, you're going to find also, perhaps you should be looking at systems that are in place in many outside countries to see what you can do and how these countries can assist you here to improve your, what is a very difficult task that you're undertaking. Also, on your budget, you've mentioned in your expenditure, I think it's professional-program cost up to about over 23 million rands. Why is this grouped together? What exactly is this, and can we not have it separated if it's two separate issues? That then brings me on to this department of yours is bordering very much on investigative work as well as policing work. I know that when you recruit, you obviously recruit your personnel to ensure that they have the skills. But I'm also asking what kind of training are you giving your people and so on, since they have this huge task that they have to undertake. Then I'm just going to mention very briefly the issue of the loan sharks. This is a very difficult issue to control. and we need to have a checklist, we need laws in place, we need to have ways and means of deciding if a person borrows 100 rand from his neighbor, if the neighbor takes back 150 rand, is that neighbor now loan shark? What is the situation? It's an agreement between two people. The neighbor can look, I didn't really have it. I dug deep to take out 100 rand and give it to him because he was in need. He needed assistance. I said, look, I have to pay back the 50 rand to a loan shark, whatever. So it's all that kind of dynamics that come about. So what we need is laws in place. To just try policing these things without laws is going to be very difficult. How we actually go about that, I think it is for honourable members, for us to apply our minds to ensure that we bring the necessary or we promulgate the necessary legislation which is going to govern over these things. With regard to African Bank, yes, as I said, Deputy CEO has covered me on that one, but your association of the police as well, and I've been covered on that as well. On this issue of loan sharks, I think it's important, I don't know how this is actually going to be done, but without quantifying to what extent, you see, we're saying that there's a lot of money involved, we might find that the impact of the African Bank mismanagement on the gross domestic product is actually far greater than the impact of maybe 2 years or even 5 years of the risk management or what is happening with the loan shark, unless we actually can quantify this. And this is a very difficult thing to quantify. Where does one draw the line and where do we stay? But if we can begin to do those things, I think then we will be able to address and manage over these the misdemeanors that are taking place. Chairperson, I think that covers me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Walter. You have taken two of my questions, so let me put a different angle to it. The one is on what Honourable Walter calls loan sharks. I was talking to a group of people the other day about the queues in a bank. You go in a bank now and you do these numbers. I was astonished to see the number of people sitting in a queue where they are making notes. You know, the personal notes. And he was sitting there, got an SMS again from someone. Now, my question there is, do we have rates that institutions can charge? If you give it to us, and it would be helpful for all of us serving the people also to say that you can't be expected if you go for a personal loan to pay more than X percentage. Because what the banks are now doing, they're saying you can borrow so much money and you can pay it back over this period so far. And my mathematics has never been good enough to be able to calculate what are the interest that they're charging you back. That's the first question. My second question is, you are talking about the amendments that we have made to the Credit Act. In your experience, from what you have shared with us, give us the impression that the amendments is giving you more muscle to act. But our question would be, as legislatures, do you feel that it gives you enough muscle, particularly for the prosecutor, for the prosecution authorities? Because you did say that what sometimes happens is that people get off because of the magistrate. Now, what we've done, for example, when we look at other abuses in our society, we, for example, said for rape, minimum sentence. For killing a spouse, minimum sentence. Now, we don't want to introduce that necessarily throughout, but we are saying that is our legislation deterrent? The final question that I have is, you mentioned in your presentation, I thought that I heard you saying that you have 13 registered credit bureaus. And on the slide you're saying you are auditing 14 credit bureaus that's registered. So if we can just get an idea of the number, and then maybe also then ask our support staff to get the names of the credit bureaus from you, so that if we walk around and we see these windows beautifully painted, offering people loans, that we would be able also, as government officials, to check whether they are in fact registered or not. I see many of them in downtown Joburg. I don't know whether they are registered or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members. Unfortunately, the honourable member who had the question is not in the room, but in the room. Well, all finance-related or budget-related questions, they were asked by the honourable member.
Just to be fair with him, please.
Thank you, Jeff. We'll respond to the other questions. Let me just start off with credit bureaus. We've got, I think the deputy CEO has to answer me. We had 14 credit bureaus, but I know there's one that was in the process of being cancelled because they were operating from a laptop. And that is a no-no. But and these are credit bureaus. You know, this is your experience, your TransUnion. But in terms of rates that credit providers, we've got more than 4,600 credit providers registered with about 38,000 branches countrywide. And in terms of numbers, 80% of those are the small credit providers, and the banks are the larger credit providers, the banks, retailers, you know, and so forth. But it's more than 4,600 that are registered. And we will provide those names to the honourable gentleman
there. Through the secretary.
Through the secretary, yes. We'll definitely do that. We'll provide both the names of the registered credit providers, the names of the registered credit bureaus, the names of the registered debt counsellors, because and debt counsellors are individuals that are regulated by the NCR to assist over-indebted consumers. And it normally helps when a person is over-indebted to know where to go, you know, to seek help. Do interest rates that institutions charge regulated? Yes, Honourable Chair. Interest rates are regulated in terms of the maximum that credit providers can charge. There are three costs that are regulated and are described in the National Credit Act. It's the interest rates, monthly service fees, and initiation fees. Now, in terms of interest rates, the interest rates vary. The maximum that credit providers can charge vary according to the type of credit product. You have a different maximum interest rate for mortgages, a maximum interest rate for secured credit issues, either vehicle finance or, you know, furniture, a maximum that you can charge in terms of unsecured credit, a maximum that you can charge in terms of your short-term credit, which is defined as a loan up to 8,000 rand payable over a period of 6 months. And there are different rates that caps that are going to apply from the 6th of May. But I can just give you an idea quickly, Chairperson, and we will also send a copy of these interest rates with your secretary. Now, let's also just understand that the interest rates that are prescribed are linked to the repo rate. So whenever the repo rate changes, so does the caps and, you know, in terms of interest rates. Now, for mortgage agreements, the current interest rate that any one credit provider can charge is 20.40% per annum. In terms of credit facilities, which is the overdraft facilities and credit cards, the maximum that these providers can charge is 25.4%. In terms of unsecured credit transactions, the maximum that any one credit provider can charge currently is 25.4%. As you remember, from the 6th of May, that has been reduced to 28%. Okay. Now, for small, for developmental credit agreements, which are credit agreements extended towards low-cost housing, small-scale businesses, and education, is 35.4% per annum currently. Short-term transactions, which are loans up to 8,000, payable over a period of 6 months, it's 5% per month. Other credit agreements, this is your pension-backed, you know, agreements and so forth, it's 35.4%. And incidental credit agreements is 2% per annum. Now, an incidental credit agreement becomes an incidental credit agreement in the event that you default. An example of that would be an instance where you have appointed an accountant to do your books, and they give you, a statement where you have to pay a certain amount a month. At the end of the month, you don't pay that amount, and they lay interest on the outstanding amount. They can never charge you more than 2% per month. So it becomes incidental at the time when you default. It may be something that you owe a doctor. The doctor issues with a statement. You don't pay within 30 days. They then charge you interest or fee. They can never charge you more than 2% per month on that outstanding account. Okay? Now, the interest rates are going to cap to change from the 6th month. They've been lowered. Mortgage loans can never be charged, you know, the charge can never exceed 90% per annum. Credit facilities can never exceed an interest rate of 21% per annum. Unsecured credit is now from 35 to 28% per annum. Developmental credit agreements, can never be more than 34% per annum. Short-term transactions, it's 1% per month for the first loan. If they extend another loan to you, they have to, you know, they have to exceed an interest rate of 3%. So this is really to disincentivize credit providers from, you know, rolling over the, you know, loans. So, and then, yeah, other credit agreements, it's 24% per annum. But I think the huge decrease was in respect of unsecured credit. Thank you.
We had to answer all the questions on finances while you were not here. I hope you don't mind. It's fine. We'll do them again. Not finances. Okay. Yeah, we'll do them last.
Thank you, Captain. You know, as Honorable Tedo was directing questions at the CEO, I was reminded of one famous writer who said to be honored to be profession, especially when you are talking about the target not being too high. The reason why I'm saying this is because another committee, the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry and Saroj, can then testimony to that. The members of the view that we're setting our targets too low, so that we can achieve and exceed and so forth. And the feeling here is that the targets are too high, are we not setting ourselves up for, you know, for failure and so forth. It's a very clear balancing act that we try to maintain, because we take our capacity constraints into account, the budget into account, the fiscal is very, very strained, and we have to be appreciative of that. It's sometimes a bit expensive to conduct investigations and to prosecute matters before the court. We need to get external counsels, for example, to argue our cases, and we don't come very cheap and so forth. So sometimes we have to employ audit firms to assist with that, because some of the investigations and issues are very, very complicated and so forth. But we take all this into account, and arrive at what we think is reasonable. So at this point in time, we are believing that they are reasonable, and we review them on an ongoing basis, and revise them accordingly. If there's a need, then we go back to the portfolio committee to say that, and the DTI seek approval to revise them high or down, and so forth. As far as electronic applications are concerned, your main concerns with regards to proper affordability assessment being done. Now, after the implementation of the Act was very misty around affordability. All the trade providers were required to do was to conduct affordability and interpretation of semantics and how deep are supposed to be going and so forth in a review. But we have since amended the Act and the new regulations are in place, which we have tried to cover all the grey areas and to beef up and direct trade providers as to what they actually have to be doing. For example, it's now mandatory for them to ask for pay slips, credit bureau report, where they can evaluate and assess the payment, top out, see the number of accounts that specific consumer is having, and so forth. And verify as well the disposable income, you know, of consumers after deduction for statutory, obligations of consumers. And new things as well, such as asking the consumer for making it guarantee for consumers as well to be honest when they apply for credit. Because this is a challenge as well. It's a two-way process. I need the money. And in terms of the NCA, I'm supposed to be honest as far as declaring my financial commitments are concerned. So sometimes I under-declare. Instead of saying that I have 10 kids, you know, I have two so that I can qualify. And a lot of other things that are going to require and that there's no proof for example, and so forth. So it's a two-year process, and what we did as a regulator was, for the past financial year, we went on an educational drive for credit providers and our registrars on the regulation to educate them on how to conduct affordability assessments. And the same message we are carrying in our consumer awareness campaigns as well. Educate consumers about their rights, as well about their obligations. But please, you know, be honest when you declare, because if you under-declare and credit is extended to you, you know, the next month you're not going to be able to pay them. And now it's no longer a defense for you. You can't raise it as a defense in court if you were dishonest, and it's proven that you were dishonest. So we are also engaging with, you know, starting with the banks, to check their modalities as well of how to do these things and so forth. We will be visiting one of the big banks, one of the big four, coming shortly, you know, just to look at how they, you know, what systems do they have in place, for example, to calculate and to evaluate when a person applies for credit. Honorable Valda made mention of wanted to know what sort of training do we give to our employees. On the Compact Fund, we have inspectors. They are at the forefront of conducting raids, conducting investigations. So these are mainly trained around the investigative area. So they must have expertise in how to investigate cases, how to gather evidence that is court directed, because we want to win at the end of the day. We want to investigate, and when you take the method to go, they fall through the method because of insufficient evidence and so forth. So yeah, we recruit from the police and, you know, other people that are relevant experience, and then continue to provide them with training in that regard. We have compliance officers who conduct on-site inspections on premises of credit providers, be they retailers, banks, and so forth, and what they monitor compliance with the Act and so forth, and identify deficiencies or delinquencies, and then escalate them accordingly. We also have researchers, a research component, because we are of the view that research is a very powerful tool. We need to understand the landscape that we are regulating, and rightly so, you indicated that we committed to providing provincial dynamics, the various cities for levels and so forth, and this cannot be achieved through research. So we have a research component, that's why we are able to tell you the number of credit active consumers in the country, the open debt levels and so forth and everything, the number of accounts that we have and so forth. And this is like an early warning system. It informs our investigations, it informs our educational campaigns, which areas to go for and everything else, and what is you. And out of this, we realize that, you know, we can pick up certain trends. For example, today, the problems in Limpopo may not necessarily be the same as in Taru, for example, and so forth. So, yeah. Thank you, I think I have covered.
Okay, just to respond on the questions posed by the Honourable Member on the budget. The first one was on other income. What comprises that budget of the overly on other income? But basically, this one is mainly the royalties that we receive from the credit bureaus. We have what we call the NLR, the National Loan Register, that comes from, you know, from MMRC, which was, you know, integrated to NCR. So, you know, the credit bureau, they pay for the utilization of information from this register, you know, information on the micro-lenders. So that's where we get our million. For example, for the students, really, they paid up to about 1.2 million. So we are, you know, as much as we want to phase out this register, but it's bringing in some income for us. Another question, it was on the breakdown of professional stroke program cost. Basically, the 53 million, the breakdown of the cost is mainly the core functions, the cost that relate to the core merit of the NCR. It's for legal fees, professional fees, it's educational campaigns, and the shop that we engage on, that campaigns related cost. As the CEO has alluded to the fact that we also run that concerns to assist the consumer for to regulate we regulate the cancers over sitting the consumers who are going to under cancelling review. And also registration costs, because at the end of the day, the regulator, we also register the credit provider. So all of that is clumped under the category program cost. Responding to, also the last one is also on compliance related cost. And then moving over to the ICT operational system, where the question was, is it really the budget that you've put here, is it enough? Honestly, it's not enough. However, as I said earlier, we are in the process of integrating our IT systems. We want to develop a fully integrated operational system, the market that we are regulating, you know, the credit providers, they've got, you know, top of the class systems and so forth. So as the regulator as well, we need a sophisticated integrated operational system or IIT operational system. However, how we have approached it because of the budget constraints, we are going to be developing and implementing, you know, the systems in phases. In NCR, we have about 8 departments. Obviously, then we all want to integrate with their system. So, to date, we have managed to develop one system, and the other one is at an advanced stage. So we will, you know, develop them once by one per financial year, up until we get to the 8 subsystems. Then the last one, the deputy CEO has answered on the kind of training, you know, that he provides. Just to add on the one as well, on ICT skills, we try to spend them for training, especially in the wake of the ICT governance framework that has been developed by DPSA, which we are in the process of implementing. So we will send our true IT resources, you know, all the training to, you know, to associated with data in the process to drive the implementation of the governance framework. Thank you.
No, what I think there's another question that you posed around whether the amendments are sufficient to make us as a regulator, you know, more effective and, you know, for enhanced consumer protection. I'd like to believe on our chair that with the recent amendments that were promulgated, we would want to test them over time to see whether they will be effective, and I'd like to believe that they will be effective. And I think we really need to test them before we can call on, you know, any additional amendments, because they were recently promulgated, and we are still in the process of, you know, educating consumers and, you know, registrants, monitoring their compliance, you know, with the new regulations, and to make sure that they implement, you know, these regulations. We will be looking at doing a study on the impact, you know, of these amendments, especially the regulations around affordability assessments and the total cost of credit. So we are going to conduct a study towards the end of the year to look at the, you know, to look at the impact of these regulations on consumers, and we will report back on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. No members, can we bring it to a close on that? Thank you. We appreciate very much you and your team putting out the presentation that you've made us in the budget. We now feel confident that really we have to present. We're not presenting the budget to the House, but the DGI one. But we want to assure you that we appreciate the work that you're doing. We, as you would have noticed from our comments, are saying that it is an uphill battle, but we are here to also make sure that you are able to do that to the best of your ability. Honourable members, just two comments. One is to say that earlier Honourable Tebe referred to, there is an annual report, and we want to notice with appreciation the annual report for 2014-15 that we receive today, with the annual performance plan that has much more detail that is the other document. It was a summary on the slide that was presented to us here. That's one thing. The other is going to be on a lighter note before we conclude. Advocate Tolwane, you referred to the problem that people have when they apply. That you can't say you have 10 children, you'll rather say you have 2. That doesn't apply to the culture. When you buy a TV, you can say you have 10 children. Okay, honourable members, can we then call it a day, or call it morning? We trust that we would be able to honour the meeting at 2 o'clock by Department of Public Works.
Yeah.
Lunch will be served, Martin? No lunch, but we're having a snack. We're having a snack. So if you want to arrive, say, from 1:30, have your snack, you are welcome to do that.
Martin,
you will set us up from 1:30. I've just forgotten the matter that we have to deal with, is a procedural matter. The minutes of last meeting, which was a briefing by DTI on the special economic zones. Rebecca has shared the minute with us before, and I see that, oh, you haven't corrected. My only correction on this, honourable members, on page 1, was that it's not in Tier How, it's in Tier Plum. Other than that, it's a very short minute. do you need me to go through it, or can we just proceed? It was just a presentation that was done to us on the SUSS. It was sent from he sent us the minute together with the... You sent it with the documents of this meeting. But yours was sent separately. Because of that, can I just go through it, please, honourable members? We state who were present, there were no apologies. We state the staff from the DTI, the staff, support staff that was there, the opening and welcome, the proceedings, which is normally just a summary of what was presented, the conclusions of the committee, where there's just two elements raised there, then the adoption of the minutes of the 24th of February 2016 meeting, which was on back industrialism, and that concluded the meeting at 11:30. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of that, and just upon somebody who seconds it, please? Honorable Timunia was there, Honorable Kebe, Honorable Tihale, Honorable Nita, Honorable Father. Honorable Timunia? Sorry, Kebe, are you proposing adoption?
I do say no, there is a silent decision you will not like. I move for the adoption.
Okay, and seconded by Honorable Tihale. Thank you very much, Honorable members. We may adjourn the meeting for the briefing by the Department of Public Works.